This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Rachel Martin. What magazines will you be packing in your beach bag this summer? Town and Country, Food and Wine, perhaps? Field and Stream? Or maybe Garden and Gun? That is the title of an up-and-coming publication that bills itself as the soul of the South. In 5 short years, the magazine has amassed a dedicated following and picked up critical acclaim along the way. NPR's Debbie Elliott visited the magazine's offices in Charleston, South Carolina, to find out more.
The cover of the summer issue of Garden and Gun entices you to hit a southern road. A smiling young woman in skinny white jeans, a straw hat, Wayfarers tucked into her pocket, appears ready to jump into a vintage red Mercedes Roadster, top down, all under a bright Carolina blue sky.
All right, guys.
Earlier this spring, editor-in-chief David DiBenedetto was cooking up the cover with his staff.
As we think about it, I think there are 3 things that we need to think about. We got to say roads, we got to say summer, and we got to say south.
The wall is covered with shots of cars, beaches, and beautiful women. DiBenedetto says every pitch does not necessarily have to include a shotgun or a magnolia blossom.
Right. Don't judge it by its name.
The Savannah native spent 12 years in the New York publishing world before joining G&G, as they call it. He says he instantly saw the appeal.
This is a magazine that is about everything in the South that I love. It's not just about, you know, being in the field hunting or fishing. It's about culture. It's about art. It's about bourbon and barbecue. It was about everything that I truly missed.
The magazine has a distinct feel with thick paper and vivid photography. It launched in 2007 with writer Pat Conroy on the cover and counts among its contributors Roy Blunt Jr., Clyde Edgerton, and Julia Reed. Tom Brokaw once wrote a tribute to his bird dogs. The name Garden and Gun comes from a now-defunct Charleston nightclub, popular in the 1970s. President and CEO Rebecca Darwin says it captures the spirit of the magazine.
The garden is really a metaphor for the land, which is really what's at the heart of this whole magazine. And then the gun is the sporting life, which is, of course, a key element of the magazine.
The summer issue includes a recipe for strawberry moonshine fried pies, a profile of Alabama folk artist Thornton Dial, southern road trip pit stops, fly fishing in South America, and island hopping in Bermuda. Darwin co-founded Garden and Gun when she returned to South Carolina after a lengthy magazine career in New York, including a stint as publisher of The New Yorker. She saw an opening for a magazine showcasing fine southern living, one that could draw both women and men.
I did want the magazine to appeal to a sophisticated, worldly person. And it's not to say that the person that reads Garden and Gun doesn't read Condé Nast Traveler or Vanity Fair or whatever it is. But so many of those magazines do what they do really, really well, but most of their stories come out of the Northeast or the West Coast. And I do think that there is another world here.
There was nothing out there that was a magazine for my daily lifestyle.
That's Charleston native Pierre Manigo, chairman of the board of the Evening Post Publishing Company. He's one of Darwin's partners who helped start Garden and Gun.
I think that a lot of people have looked at the South as being a backwoods place, a backwater. Charleston has been a backwater since, you know, after the Civil War. And I think now it's really coming into a new golden age. We've made it through the, you know, the traumas of racism and integration and all these, you know, we've finally gotten past the Civil War. We've finally gotten past Reconstruction. It's a wonderful story to be told that nobody was telling.
The magazine appears to have appeal beyond Dixie. Some 45% of its subscribers live elsewhere. Readership surged last year after Garden and Gun picked up the National Magazine Award for General Excellence. Circulation is now about 260,000 readers, a 73% jump since its inception. But the publication has not been immune to the struggles facing print media. Early on, it skipped an issue because of financial shortfalls. That's when Darwin decided to further tap her most loyal readers by offering them a way to live out the Garden and Gun experience. By paying to join the Garden and Gun Club, members can attend events like this candlelight affair at the historic South Carolina Society Hall in Charleston.
So we're going to give it a light chop.
In the kitchen, renowned chef Joseph Lynn of Blackberry Farm in Tennessee is arming waiters with tiles of local oysters.
Yeah, what you got?
Yes.
The grilled oysters, right?
Capers, blades, oysters. Yep.
Capers, blades, oysters. Gotcha.
It's round one of a five-course meal he's preparing for Garden and Gun's Secret Society Supper Club. Lynn is pleased to be associated with G&G.
I think that their magazine really kind of represents the South on a national level for people who always are like, what's so great about the South? And that's one of my favorite magazines, the classic cocktails and food and traditions.
Julie and Robert Hicks of Lexington, South Carolina, are new members to the Secret Society, but have been reading Garden and Gun since Robert pilfered the first issue from a doctor's office. I ask them how it's different from other magazines geared to the South.
This just goes deeper. You know, Robert doesn't read Southern Living. I mean, there'll be some articles you'll read about some writers.
Southern Living is like Coca-Cola, and Garden and Gun's like a good bourbon.
Yes.
The G&G clubs go on skeet shoots, mountain getaways, and bourbon tastings. This fall, there's an Ode to Hemingway's Cuba at Sea Island, Georgia, with tarpon fishing and cigar rolling. That upper crust bent is disturbing to Mark Smirnoff, the editor of another Southern magazine, the Oxford American.
Garden and Gun plays up the old South plantation fantasy, the Gone with the Wind myth. And they've just modernized it, put a price tag on it, and it's grotesque because it doesn't represent the entire South.
By not dealing head-on with politics, race, or religion, Smirnoff says Garden and Gun whitewashes the South. In defense, editor-in-chief David DiBenedetto says Garden and Gun is not about black or white, but telling good stories.
And I don't think once you've read this magazine that you can say that it doesn't have soul or that it's just a glorified South. I mean, this magazine's about high and low.
I fear they keep using me for the lowbrow.
Best-selling author Rick Bragg of Alabama.
Admittedly, I'm not going to get on my horse and go chase a fox. You know, I don't own any riding boots. I'm probably not going to do a lot of things that they cover for, a more elite South. But they also cover lost highways. They let me write about eating my first oyster.
Bragg writes for Oxford American and Garden and Gun and sees value in both as a forum for Southern storytellers.
I do greatly love writing about where I'm from. And I think that's why they draw so many Southern writers. We like writing about mama.
And Garden and Gun's readers pick up on that sense of pride in place. Debbie Elliott, NPR News.